This is DW News live from Berlin. Tonight, the next wave of attacks against Islamic State. Military leaders from Washington to Berlin are already talking about the battle after Mosul. At a meeting in Paris, the United States emphasized to coalition members the importance of winning the battle against IS, but also of winning the peace. We'll get more from our correspondent at those talks in Paris. Also on the show, did Turkey torture detainees after July's failed coup attempt? Human Rights Watch says it did. We'll talk to a man who says he is one of Turkey's torture victims. And a deadly militant raid on a police college in Pakistan. Gunmen kill more than 50 people after storming dormitories where cadets were sleeping. I'm Brent Goff. It's good to have you with us. Tonight in Mosul, the battle against Islamic State is in full swing, and Western defense ministers say they'll make sure the radical group is defeated, not only in Iraq, but in Syria as well. They met in Paris today to discuss strategy for war and for peace after the battle has been won. We have this report.
Coalition forces meet fierce resistance as they close in on Mosul. Peshmerga troops came under heavy attack, even in villages thought to have been cleared of Islamic State fighters. The Iraqi Defense Ministry says its elite counter-terrorism units have reached the outskirts of the city. IS fighters are resorting to desperate tactics to prevent them from advancing further. Here, an attempted car suicide bombing was narrowly prevented by a coalition airstrike. Meanwhile, defense ministers from the 12 Western nations in the US-led coalition met in Paris. They were there to discuss not only the battle for Mosul, but the future of the entire region. US Defense Secretary Ash Carter said the coalition was also laying the groundwork to retake the stronghold of IS in Syria, Raqqa.
Finally, the defense ministers broadly endorsed a set of defense policy principles that will help ensure we sustain the coalition and our commitments to it, not only for the purposes of helping our local partners win the battle, but also helping them win the peace. After all, we cannot perfectly predict what will happen after our coalition defeats ISIL in Iraq and Syria, so we have to be ready for anything, and we have to keep working together.
That message may have been directed at two countries not attending the summit, Iraq and Turkey. Baghdad has told Ankara to stay out of the fight for Mosul. Turkey, though, has repeatedly said it wants to take part in the final push. If developments in Iraq threaten Turkey's security and stability, just like in Syria, we will use our power, as is our right, to quell the threat there. That includes the possibility of ground operations. That is our most natural right. Before the final assault on Mosul, Iraqi forces are attempting to evacuate residents from nearby villages. The United Nations says some 7,500 people have already fled the fighting.
Our correspondent Barbara Vasil is following that meeting in Paris. She sent us this roundup.
The main message of Ashton Carter, the U.S. defense minister, who spoke for his Western colleagues here in Paris, was things around Mosul are going according to plan. The advances towards the city are satisfactory and the troops are fighting with courage. Everybody knows, though, that the next step, that to enter Mosul, the street-to-street, hand-to-hand fighting that is to be expected will be much more difficult. Ministers also defined the next step they want to take in their fight against so-called Islamic State, the taking back of the Syrian city of Raqqa, the last stronghold of IS. They did give no timing and no exact planning. However, they said that this will coincide with the fight in Mosul. So that is the final step their coalition wants to take. Another worry for the ministers is the threat of returning IS fighters to Europe. They say that they are trying to make the borders more secure to prevent that. However, everybody acknowledges that there is no total security against them. Data sharing, data mining, that is really what's on the agenda to prevent further terror attacks in Europe. Barbara Wiesel, Paris.
Well, now to the terror threats within. Today, German police carried out more than a dozen anti-terror raids throughout the country. Authorities say they targeted 14 Chechen asylum seekers, including one man suspected of wanting to join Islamic State in Syria. 12 apartments and a refugee center were searched. It included the states of Hamburg, Saxony, and Bavaria. As yet, no arrests have been made. At least 11 people have been killed and more than 20 injured in a suicide attack in central Somalia. The bomber drove a truck loaded with explosives into a checkpoint operated by African Union peacekeepers. Six soldiers from Djibouti were among the dead. The AU mission in Somalia says its forces then killed 10 fighters believed to be from the Islamist terrorist group Al-Shabaab. The group has fought to overthrow the internationally backed government in Mogadishu since 2007. Tonight, a damning report on Turkey's crackdown post-coup attempt. Human Rights Watch has accused the country's police of torturing and mistreating people arrested after July's failed coup attempt. Now, the report from the U.S.-based watchdog outlines 13 cases of alleged abuse. They include sleep deprivation, severe beatings, sexual abuse, including rape. In several cases, law enforcement was involved in violating detainees' rights. And Human Rights Watch says it interviewed a number of people when compiling their report. We met with one of the former detainees mentioned in their findings.
Kamil Uluç describes the 17 days he spent in police custody as pure hell. His accusations against the Turkish state are extremely grave. He says he was tortured for days together with other detainees. He says at first he was beaten, then his captors resorted to even more brutal methods.
They dragged us around the room with cords tied to our genitals. My testicles were crushed so badly that I'm still in pain whenever I use the toilet.
This is the police headquarters where Uluç was taken 2 months ago for allegedly supporting the militant Kurdish group, the PKK. He was pressed to give names. The Turkish government regularly refutes torture allegations. But after the failed coup in July, suspected coup plotters with clear signs of mistreatment were shown on television. Turkey has extended its state of emergency. Now, suspects can be detained without charges for 30 days. Human rights activists say torture is being sanctioned.
The reality is that because of the lack of access to detainees, because of the lack of availability of credible medical reports, and we can't definitively say how widespread it is. And we are concerned that it may be more widespread. We doubt it is limited to individual cases.
This photo of Eyüp Birinç, a teacher, shows him in happier days. For the last 3 months, he's been in custody in Antalya for allegedly supporting the opposition movement led by Fethullah Gülen, who lives in the U.S. His wife, Azuman, said he'd been hospitalized during interrogations. His room was left unguarded for a moment. I dashed in and asked, "What happened? Why are you here?" He replied, "I had to have part of my small intestine removed. They beat me terribly." Just a few years ago, human rights groups said Turkey had made progress in the struggle to end torture in detention. Now they fear a return to darker times. Kamil Uluç says he can hardly sleep after his ordeal. He is in pain, he adds, but a hospital has refused to issue an official assessment of his condition.
We kept wondering why we had to endure so much torture. I asked the police, is it because we're Kurdish? I don't know to this day.
All right, earlier we spoke to a former member of the ruling party in Turkey, and we asked why the government is not doing anything about these allegations.
I think it's when you look at the human rights reports prepared by United States of America, by European organizations, or different human rights groups over the decades, torture has been an issue that was brought to the attention. And when you look at the level of torture that is decreasing after AK Parti came to power, this government, Justice and Development Party, had put an effort to make strides in alleviating them and making the betterment of the standards of people's lives. But indeed, there might be people who might exploit the power within their hands.
All right, that was the reaction from Turkey to those accusations of torture by police. Now to the United States, just 2 weeks to go before U.S. elections. And DW is asking, what do African-American communities think about the candidates? Our correspondent Richard Walker has been to Memphis, Tennessee, to meet a black moderate Republican who wants to make his party more acceptable to African-American voters. Take a look.
A small tree is all that marks the spot. Last year, on this lonely road in southern Memphis, a young black man lost his life. William Young has brought us here. He's a student training to be a pastor and a leader in the local movement against excessive police violence. This is what happened. It was a Friday night in July when Darius Stewart was pulled over in a car with a broken taillight. Officer Connor Schilling found that he had two open warrants in other states. A struggle followed, some of it captured in a witness video. Officer Schilling then opened fire, hitting Darius twice in the chest. For William, it was another case of police resorting too quickly to deadly force, and that frightens him.
Been pulled over for and asked, do you live in this neighborhood? Where are you headed? You know, is this your car? How long have you had this car? It just lets me know I'm not safe and that my life can be taken away at any moment. So one of the reasons why I advocate for others is because just in case it happens to me, I want folks to advocate for me.
As for Officer Schilling, he's been granted early retirement for post-traumatic stress disorder resulting from the shooting itself. William finds that outrageous.
It's sinful, it's shameful, it's a disgrace, it's a miscarriage of justice. I can't even put into words. It's almost as if the Memphis Police Department just spit in my face.
We head out of Memphis to meet another young black leader facing frustrations of his own. This mobile phone store isn't a place you'd expect to find a rising star in the Republican Party. But Chris Adams is taking a career break here, self-imposed exile from a party taken over by Donald Trump and his racially tinged campaign.
When I'm talking to Hispanics, Latinos, African Americans, people of, you know, East Indian descent, all the minorities I reach out to, these people, my personal friends, we look racist to them because this guy's at the top. So they always ask me, why didn't you stop him?
Trump's rise has shattered Chris's dream of a Republican Party that embraces a diverse America.
This is what we saw the future of our party being. A true big tent. We can have everybody in our party. And we can work on creating jobs and supporting communities. This is what we were looking for.
Okay, I was over here
for a second. For now, Chris and his wife Alicia are trying to enjoy a quieter time with their baby daughter. But Chris is determined to make a comeback in what he hopes will be a post-Trump America, to bring his ideas back to the Republican Party and to the issue of police violence.
You got Senator Tim Scott talking about it, and he's a senator, and he gets pulled over. You think they will have an awareness of the fact that he's a senator. So if it can happen to him, it can happen to anybody. That's the issue we need to solve. You solve it by going, sitting down and listening, and then you solve it by going back to these respective police stations, telling these police chiefs that they need to have some more accountability for what their guys are doing when they go out.
Back in Memphis, William pays his respects at the Lorraine Motel, where the civil rights leader Martin Luther King was assassinated nearly half a century ago. The motel is now the National Civil Rights Museum, and William works here as a guide, funding his studies and finding inspiration at the same time. There are echoes of the civil rights era throughout downtown Memphis and Martin Luther King's unfulfilled dream of a different kind of America, the dream that William still believes in.
I see an America where it says, you are a human being, you are an American, so you deserve equal treatment. I may not know you, but you're my brother, you're my sister, we're one.
We're going to take a short break. More news coming up in 1 minute.
am taking your job. I am smarter than you. And I am not the only one. There are a lot more like me. We work extremely well together. You better start thinking about what you are going to do with the rest of your life. And how you are going to make a living. Because at some point, robots will take over. Robotics impacting the workplace. Starting November 5th on DW.
Welcome back. Here with DW News, live from Berlin. Our top stories. Western defense ministers meeting in Paris have renewed their resolve to defeat Islamic State. The U.S. says it's not only important to win the battle against IS, but also to win the peace. Pakistan has suffered another major terrorist attack. At least 59 people are dead after gunmen wearing suicide vests stormed a police training facility in the city of Quetta. Scores more were injured, many of them seriously. A number of groups, including Islamic State, have claimed responsibility.
Investigators say it was a well-coordinated attack. The assailants fired at the police academy in the Pakistani city of Quetta from different points. This cadet was resting in one of the college's dorms. He escaped the gunman by jumping from the roof. Three or four militants came directly into our barrack. They just barged in and started firing point blank. We started screaming and running around in the barracks. Then I ran upstairs. Police and the military launched a counter-operation to rescue cadets who were being held hostage inside. This facility was home to some 700 recruits. It's an attack that has put pay to Islamabad's claims it has reined in militant extremism. There was complete peace for the last 2-3 months, but yesterday this incident happened despite our best efforts. So the message is, we have to be alert all the time, as this war is continuing and will be continued until the end.
Security agencies, intelligence agencies, ki mehnat.
As more than 100 survivors remain in hospital in a critical condition, funerals are getting underway for the victims. It's a reminder that nowadays, nowhere in Pakistan, however well guarded, is safe from militants.
All right, time for business news. Volkswagen's Dieselgate scandal, it seems to never end, but an important chapter in this saga closed today, Fadi.
You name it. Thank you very much, Brent. The dirty diesel scandal came to light a year ago, and we all knew this was going to cost the car maker a lot. Now, a U.S. judge has approved a record settlement of close to $15 billion. That includes fines for hundreds of thousands of cars that cheated on emissions tests, contributions to an environmental fund, and a buyback scheme, so customers can return vehicles from midway through next month or get a free fix and compensation. The German firm still faces further prosecution in the US as well as back home and elsewhere in the world. Time to cross over to Jens Korte now, covering this story from the US perspective. And talking about the US perspective, what is the sentiment over there across the pond when you hear about this settlement?
Well, it has been a pretty generous offer from Volkswagen. That's what most people are saying over here. Sure, there were certain car owners that they were hoping for to maybe to get the full purchasing price, so the price they paid when they purchased the vehicles. But overall, the offer is generous. So now it's a good day for Volkswagen to get this done and over with. But it's also been a pretty pricey day for Volkswagen because look at the market share of VW here in the U.S. It's about 2%, and this is really a pretty hefty price tag. And now we have to wait what's going to continue. We still have the claims open with the 3-liter diesel vehicles. There might also be some lawsuits open from single states and also from some investors. But this was the big one, and that seems to be done and over with.
All right, but we are staying with the automobile industry. General Motors is making a lot of money in the U.S., but not in Europe. Their really sales are plummeting. Why is that?
Well, pretty much because of the Brexit. The UK is a pretty important market for General Motors in Europe with the Opel vehicles. And it's not that people in England are not buying Opels any longer, but with the Brexit and the pressure on the British pound, that actually caused some pain for General Motors over in Europe. And that's why we saw a quarterly loss overall. General Motors sold more SUVs, pickup trucks here in the United States. And that overall did help to double, actually, the profit in comparison to last year's quarter. It was a record revenue. So it was a bit of a surprise with those numbers that the stock of General Motors actually almost lost 4% in value.
Jens Koot, as always, thank you so much for your information. German business confidence is defying predictions. The ifo institute says its key index is back at its highest level since April. There were warnings that Brexit would break the back of the export dependent economy of Germany, and of course I'm well aware Britain hasn't yet left the European Union, but you would think company bosses would be a little more worried.
IFO says industrial companies here are doing extremely well right now. Management says the outlook is the best in 2 years, with huge demand for investment goods and machinery. The wholesale sector slipped, but the construction industry has extended its six-month winning streak to record levels. And IFO says the labour market remains promising, with a constant stream of new jobs. Although business confidence here faltered in August as a direct result of Britain's vote to leave the EU, it recovered quickly and is still heading firmly uphill. IFO says for now, geopolitics are taking a back seat for Germany. The current geopolitical hotspots and the CETA agreement aren't affecting the German economy. There are no worries because business is being level-headed and simply keeping an eye out for any concrete effects. You can definitely say the upswing here is gathering speed. The numbers show companies are very optimistic. But Brexit won't leave German industry totally untouched. The IW Institute in Cologne says the weaker pound against the euro and an expected decline in British growth will see German exports to the UK fall by 6% next year, possibly shaving 0.25% of GDP here.
The International Monetary Fund warns growth in sub-Saharan Africa could slow to its lowest level in 20 years. It cites depressed commodity prices and an unfriendly global economic environment. But the group also says the region needs reform.
Unlike in some developing countries, Kenya is reaping the rewards of sensible investment. In roads, housing and energy infrastructure, the broad-based economy is expected to grow by 6% this year. Yet the International Monetary Fund has revised its economic expectations for the region as a whole downward. While sub-Saharan Africa grew at an average pace of 3.4% in 2015, that's expected to drop to 1.4% this year, the slowest rate in the past two decades. The IMF says South Africa is one of those dragging the region down. The poorly performing mining industry there means the South African economy will grow by just 0.1%. But if the world economy improves, the sub-Saharan region will also benefit. The IMF saying that it would expect a 2.9% growth if that happens. Despite this year's economic dip, there's reason enough to be optimistic.
All right, back to you, Brent.
All right, Fanny, thank you. It's time to talk about Masha and the Bear now. A YouTube video has had over 1.5 billion clicks, and it's not even music. It's an episode of Masha and the Bear, a Russian computer animation series, which has captured the hearts of people all over the world. Take a look.
She's just a simple girl from rural Russia, but Masha has the recipe for success. The series follows her adventures with a slow fatherly bear who often falls victim to her crazy antics. Loosely based on a Russian folk story, it seems to be a format with global appeal. There's very little dialogue in the series, but I think everyone understands gestures and the humour of facial expressions. The porridge-making episode has an incredible 1.7 billion views. The success is partly down to a clever marketing strategy. For the first 3 years, we didn't fight against online piracy or illegal downloads. We just wanted the word about the series to spread. And spread it did, to 100 countries and into 25 languages. But why do parents and children all love Masha so much?
Masha's funny.
The series is beautiful.
She's internet.
We watch Masha and the Bear on the official YouTube channel. The episodes are available there quickly, and we just connect our TV to the internet and watch the series there.
From Russia with love. A folk story with universal appeal.
Now I know what I'm going to get funny for Christmas. All right, after a 10-hour journey across China, two giant pandas have arrived in their new home in a nature reserve. Ayun and Yunyun were brought here from Sichuan province. Now, they're the first giant pandas to live in this part of China in over a century. For a few days, they'll be confined in their newly built panda house, but before long, they'll be plucking their bamboo shoots themselves in the surrounding forests. We wish them happy plucking. After a short break, I'll be back to take you through the day. Stick around for that, everybody.
Elections 2016, countdown to the big day.
Growing the economy.
Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, how do their economic plans compare? What could change after November the 8th and what would that mean for Europe?
Biggest jobs program.
A look at the State of the Union.
We're bringing our jobs back.
Our U.S. election special.
Made in Germany. In 60 Minutes on DW.
Stunning scenery, and a cultural landscape that is ages old. These wild and romantic highlands offer more than meadows, forests, and caves. Major attractions include Hohenzollern Castle and the university town of Tübingen. Join us in Baden-Württemberg and the Swabian Alps.
Check in 2 hours on DW. The United States and the 2016 elections. Election Day is approaching, We ask, what America do you want?
What is it?
What kind of America I would
I've
like to have?
I've got big plans for America.
I want a
peaceful America.
A woman.
Multicultural.
Strong and safe America.
Take care of the people.
Sharing values.
No drama.
We talk to people in the USA and around the world who share their opinions on the U.S. elections 2016, online and on our program on DW.